Hello, I'm Lady Carmichael, the Duchess of this pod.
And I'm Master Carmichael, Viscount of this pod.
We are siblings, though quite different.
Precisely, my dear sister. Whilst I was united in marriage nigh 6 years ago, you are still in search of that perfect union.
Oh, brother, do not fret. I'm quite content in my present state.
Certainly. I do not mean to imply that you are lacking in any way. However, Mama and Papa do long for more grandchildren.
Precisely, my dear brother. Grandchildren which, in your married state, you could provide them.
We've done our part, I feel, in providing one young strapping male heir.
A fine child, I do say. Why not add to the blessing? We would all be so pleased to welcome your offspring.
Oh, sister, let's do change the topic. This conversation has grown tired.
Perhaps so, but it is a conversation that you began, my dear brother.
And now I would like to put it out of its misery.
Of course, of course. It's the only proper thing to do.
Let us focus on what we share in common. We're both trying to like it, isn't that correct?
Indeed, we are both trying our very best to like it. Welcome to I'm Trying to Like It, the podcast where two siblings, myself and Aaron, discuss all things pop culture or pop culture adjacent. We might disagree once in a while, but you can rest assured that we're both trying to like it.
In this episode, we journey back to an era of nobility, romance, rumors, intrigue, and very restrictive corsets. We discuss the second season of the Netflix hit series Bridgerton. We also check in on the first episode of Paramount Plus's video game-inspired sci-fi series, Halo. And, of course, how could we call ourselves a pop culture podcast without giving our two cents on the Oscars? And yes, we will discuss The Slap. Hey, Rory.
Hey, Aaron.
Ah, Rory, you just slapped the crap out of me.
Keep my name out your mouth.
Rory, I have to use your name on the podcast.
Keep my name out your mouth.
Oh, gee whiz.
That's perfect.
No, we'll that was perfect. Very good. We'll keep that.
Okay, we'll keep that. Just we'll go quiet first. So, are we talking about this first, the slap?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's get it out of the way.
Okay. Are we going to do a quiet and then talk?
No, I'm including this, but everything we've just said.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's
we're in the thick of it already.
Into the thick of it. So, Aaron.
Did I send you that video, or did you?
I had already seen it because I was at church when the Oscar. I was had every intention of watching the Oscars, but I was at church. We had our Unite, and so I didn't get to watch it. But whenever I got home and I went on Twitter, it was everywhere. And so I was like, "What the heck is happening?" And so I kind of went on that trending Twitter black hole and found the video. Now it was kind of weird because in America they were able to censor it.
Yeah.
But on Twitter, the lovely world of Twitter, I was able to get because they had it at like Australia and Mexico and China and all the different areas. And so I was able to just fully indulge myself in this.
Yeah. You know what's funny about this whole situation? Well, I mean, there's a lot of funny things and also a lot of sad things. But so if you watch the video, I was the same. I was in the same situation. I was not watching the Oscars. the Oscars have been so boring for like many years.
They
now.
Really have. And many people think that this was staged.
No, I don't think it was staged. I think it was legit. But I did think it was staged at first. When I first started seeing tweets about it, because I don't remember what I was watching. Probably Yellowstone. That's what we've been watching.
That's a good show.
Anyway, we had been watching. So I am flipping through Twitter and I start to see stuff like, oh, what just went down with Will Smith at the Oscars? I had not seen a video of it yet. So I start looking into it and then I finally come across a video and it's the one that's edited with no sound. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is going on? This has to be a bit. Like, this just has to be a staged bit, you know? And then I was able to find the non-edited version like you're describing. I think it was from Australia. And yeah, and so that included the audio.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, Will Smith is a pretty good actor. He just won Best Actor. But he, I mean, that looks, he looks very angry.
Yeah.
And very serious.
Like his body language.
And
his
Chris Rock,
body language was seething.
Serious. And Chris Rock, I saw a funny tweet and they were like, anybody who thinks that that was staged has never seen Chris Rock act. Like which is kind of a slam on Chris Rock's acting abilities. Which is doubly true. I mean, he is a terrible actor.
He is a very bad actor.
But I don't, you know, he's known as a comedian, not an actor, but yeah, he's a bad actor. Anyway, so yeah, I was like, no, this actually is legit. And then whenever, so I was able to turn over and or flip over to the Oscars live and was able to see when they actually gave the award to Will Smith for Best Actor. And he came up and gave his speech, and I was like, oh, man. It was just, I knew it was going to be quite awkward. But anyway, so that was my experience with it. And, of course, then just was kind of glued to Twitter the rest of the evening.
Yeah, because...
like reading everyone's takes.
There are so many sides to it. And for me, I think I'm kind of... Okay, I don't condone the violence at all, period. I feel like if Will Smith wanted to slap Chris Rock, he should have done it off air, first
well,
and foremost.
I don't think he should have done it, period.
He shouldn't have done it, period. But here is my two cents about it. Do I think he should have done it? No. Am I okay that he did it? Yes. And here's why. Number one, it was not in the script for Chris to talk about this with Jada.
Right.
It wasn't in the script. It wasn't part of the show. Two, this isn't like she shaves her head for fun to show support for XYZ. No, this is an autoimmune disease that she has been very upfront with since 2018, that she has shown her feelings and has told people that this is a disease that she has, that she can't keep her hair and all this stuff. So he is going after her in the sense of something that she can't control. Did he deserve to be slapped? No, nobody deserves to be slapped or hit or anything like that.
Yeah.
With that, well, also, this so, also isn't the first time he's ever said something to her about her hair. This is like the second or third time that he's made fun or made a joke about her not having hair.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the way I look at it is like, I would totally agree with you that I don't think there's anything that justifies the violence of going up and slapping Chris Rock. So in that sense, I mean, it was completely inappropriate and it was wrong
for 100%.
Will Smith to do that. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's good for Chris Rock to make jokes about other people and their appearance, regardless of whether he knew that she had this autoimmune disease or not. You know, I mean, he should have just left it. I just don't think it's ever appropriate to really give people a hard time about the way they look, because you never know if that's because of just a style choice, you know,
mm-hmm.
or something that is, you know, a medical condition or whatever. So
yeah, like
particularly for women, you know, I just, and maybe even more specifically for Black women who have struggled with all kinds of, you know, negative, you know, and disrespectful stereotypes about hair and things throughout the history of the country. You know, I think now he might have felt like he had special permission to make jokes because he's Black as well. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I would just say it's not cool to make fun of people because of how they look.
Yeah.
Right. No matter what.
Yeah.
So I would say as a husband, you know, you can completely sympathize with Will Smith's feeling and his anger. But there's a lot of ways. I mean, he's a big, big star with a big platform.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have, you know, come up and said, hey, Chris, let me have that microphone for just a second. Now, listen, my wife has this, you know, autoimmune disease. And, you know, it's never cool to make fun of people because of the way they look.
Yeah.
Like, it's never fun to joke about, or it's never funny to joke about that. And he could have, like, done something productive, right?
Yeah.
Instead, he chose to just respond with emotion and kind of irresponsibly with the slap, right?
Yeah.
But I was very happy to see two things. Chris Rock chose not to press charges, which I think, you know, people can have different opinions about that. But for me, I kind of respected the way Chris Rock handled it.
Yeah,
in the moment.
I definitely did.
And
I do respect Chris Rock and the way he handled it for sure.
And then in hindsight, because people have come out later and said, like, hey, man, he could have sued. You know, he could sue. And I don't know. We might still see something like that. But I have a sense that Chris Rock is trying to let it be kind of water under the bridge to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was very happy. Now, in the moment when Will Smith came up and gave his acceptance speech, he kind of tried to make excuses for himself.
Yeah.
And I think he was trying to plead to an audience that can completely sympathize with his anger. And there's nothing wrong with sympathizing with his anger, but trying to justify his behavior is where it gets, is where we cross the line. Mm-hmm. Into. And so I don't think it was super cool how easily people kind of brushed it off. like in the moment they were like, oh yeah, standing ovation for this guy that just, you know, literally physically assaulted someone on stage. It should have been handled more appropriately, like in the moment.
Yeah.
Like with the seriousness. All that to say, like, I'm a big Will Smith fan as an actor. I think he's a great actor. And so I was very disappointed to see that. I was very happy to see that he released a public apology directed at Chris Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And addressing the sort of poor example that he set.
I mean, honestly.
And it was a good, I think it was a heartfelt apology. It sounded like Will Smith, like it sounded like what he would say in a better moment when he wasn't fueled by maybe the anger of that initial reaction. So,
I mean, honestly, not that it should have happened, period, but it couldn't have happened to a better set.
Well, you know, like, that's what I was thinking. Is like,
yeah, like,
I don't
with
know,
it being Chris
you might not
Rock.
Like Chris Rock, but man, he handled it really mm-hmm. well in the moment. And you can kind of see there's a moment there where he kind of shakes it off and he goes, he almost says, like, I could. He has a microphone in his hand, right? Like, he's
it's either
done
in his hand or it's clipped on him.
Yeah, he's got a microphone. He's on a stage. He's on live TV. He could have ripped into Will Smith in that moment,
uh-huh.
you know?
Yeah.
He could have said any number of things. He could have called for the police to come right away, you know? Like, security, whatever. He could have done a million things that would have made this an even uglier moment than it was already. And he really handled it very professionally and very, you know, thoughtfully. Like, I couldn't believe how well composed he stayed. And at first, he kind of even played it off. Well, he made it into a joke. He was like,
yeah,
man, Will Smith just you know, slapped the crap out of me. And he's like, man, this has turned into the greatest night of TV. Which I think they all recognized, like all the celebrities and the hosts, they all recognized like this is like that for the general public, this is super boring, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, the ratings for the Oscars have gone down and down and down year after year. And I'm sure this year, probably a lot of people were tuning in after the news hit Twitter. They were like, oh, man, we got to see.
I think that's why so many people thought that it was staged, because of the fact that all of a sudden this big ratings have been down forever. And then you get this huge, just big thing that happened. So
yeah,
I do not agree with the violence aspect at all, but I at the same time I think Chris Rock handled it very, very well for what happened. And I also feel like Will Smith, kudos to him for sticking up for his wife, since even though they've been through so much and everything, the way he stood up for her, probably shouldn't have put your hands on someone. So many other ways to deal with it, but yeah. I am glad that even after everything that they've been through, he did continue to stick up for her. Now, with a nice little segue, let's talk about how beautiful and the many facial expressions that was on Lupita's face as she was sitting directly behind Will Smith.
Yeah, I mean, anyone, if anyone's not sure who Lupita Nyong'o is, like, first of all, she's one of the greatest actresses we have.
Usually she plays a character that is not human, honestly.
Oh, well, she does a lot of voice work, but she's done also a lot of great. She's also
any Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele uses her a lot in his movies.
In Us, Us, and then she was also in 12 Years a Slave, which is the first time I ever saw her. She's amazing in that. Anyway, so she's sitting right over the shoulder of Will Smith, so she got a lot of camera time, and I just felt so bad for her because she had to figure out what to do with her face. And thankfully, she's an actress, so she kind of she's used to trying to make, like, work the camera, I guess. Yeah, but she maintained her composure better than I think I could have if I were in that position. I just couldn't help but feel for her.
know what I would have done in that situation. Like, if I would have been her in that situation, I don't know what
it kind of felt like done. When I was a kid. Like, sometimes I would be like, I'd go stay at a friend's house or something, and then that friend's parents would start to argue really loudly, and they would and I'd always kind of feel like I didn't know exactly what to do, and I'm just kind of stuck in this house with this family that I don't know very well, and mom and dad are arguing. And yeah, so I felt for her in that moment, but she did look wonderful, as usual.
She did. Zendaya and Andrew Garfield went together, or were there together, I'm not for sure. And Andrew Garfield, he's just such an attractive human being.
I thought that, are they dating?
No, I just think that they went together. They just went together. I don't know, but... They all must have
met on the set of No Way Home.
I am super happy with the fact that CODA won Best Picture. I am very, very happy with that. So
I have not seen it, so I can't comment. But, I mean, the problem was that I haven't seen several of the Best Picture nominees, which is such a strange change in my life over the last 5 years as a parent, because I used to... very purposefully make sure I saw all the Best Picture nominees, and I just don't have the time for it. But I have seen Dune, which I thought I was great to see that was nominated.
Yeah.
And then I also saw, just this week, I saw The Power of the Dog. It's on Netflix. Benjamin Cumberbatch?
Is Benedict? That my name? Cumberbatch?
Benedict. What am I? Yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch. Sorry. Did I say Benjamin? Benjamin?
Yes.
Anyway, that guy. Sherlock Holmes, Doctor Strange. So I saw The Power of the Dog, and it's very good. It's on Netflix. It is well worth all the attention that it has received. His performance in particular, oh man, one of the scariest characters I think I've ever seen on screen that's not like obviously a monster, right? Like, I mean, he doesn't play like a serial killer or anything, but he is so vile and angry, and it feels like there's violence just under the surface all the time, even though there's not much actual real violence that's ever happened in that film. But anyway, yeah. He's very, very good in that. So I did see Power of the Dog. I've not seen CODA. I'll need to follow up on that at some point. But
yeah, I hadn't seen Power of the Dog, but I saw Don't Look Up was one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that was another one that I saw. So I saw that one. King Richard. I've seen Coda. West Side Story, Dune. I saw most of them. I have not seen...
Yeah, there's like three or four of those I still need to check out. But
the dog one. But all in all, it was...
It was pretty typical and boring besides that moment, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was
the moment.
There
wasn't a whole lot else that was exciting about it. But yeah, I mean,
Do you think, because right now a lot is circulating about him possibly losing his award. Do you think that would happen?
I don't think it's going to happen. I would be surprised if it does. I think his apology, his follow-up apology, was a good move.
Okay.
I do think it was sincere. I don't know what was up with Will Smith that night. I don't know that he knows what was up with him. You know, that moment and the emotion and the high emotion of that night maybe just set it off. And just, I'm not trying to, you know, make an excuse, but I'm just saying I don't think Will Smith necessarily needs to be punished for that, even though I do think it was wrong. But anyway, I don't know. I did appreciate the apology he put out publicly the day after. So,
okay. Well, with that, we are going to take a little break. And when we come back, we will be talking about
Bridgerton season 2.
Reader, it has been said that competition is an opportunity for us to rise before our greatest of challenges.
This is the season the Viscount intends to find a wife.
You honestly just did that.
I believe I did.
Your Majesty, may I present Miss Kate Sharma and Edwina Sharma?
Only hope they like me.
All you have to do this evening is remember what it is you're looking for.
Someone charming. And handsome, of course.
But I cannot be the only one wondering if this former capital R rake is ready to flourish.
It is only out of the greatest love of my family that I aim to choose a bride with my head and not my heart.
We're back. We're back, everyone. Thanks for listening to those tunes whilst waiting for us to come back. We will be talking about Bridgerton season 2. It is the next book in the series by Julia Quinn. Centered around eldest Bridgerton child, Anthony.
People call him Tony. I call him Tony.
Tony. So yeah, I watched all of it, obviously.
Wow, okay. I did not.
I watched
all of season 1.
Okay.
Should we recap season 1 at all?
I don't know, because season 1...
I mean, there are some characters. Daphne, we have seen Daphne.
Yes, Daphne. Daphne was in, I think, out of the 8 episodes, she was in just like 5 of them, something like that. She's not really it's not her story anymore, so she's not really a big like character. Obviously, yeah, Simon's not in it at all. We see their little baby.
Right.
And then everybody else. All of the other Bridgertons and the Featheringtons and the Queen and Lady Danbury. And then, yeah, so.
Yeah, so
I don't know how to recap season 1.
Yeah, season 1 basically is telling the love story of Daphne and Simon, or better known as the Duke.
The Duke.
And so it unfolds as their love story. And in season 2, were mostly focused on the older brother, Anthony. And
Anthony.
Like I said, I call him Tony. we go way back.
Tony.
So maybe if instead of sort of trying to give a synopsis of season one, but that this is a, I guess to kind of, if anyone has not seen this, and there probably are some that are listening that haven't seen season one yet, but it's a period piece. It's kind of like, I kind of think of it as, what's the show that everybody loved from a few years ago that's kind of set the same time period?
Downton Abbey,
right? So it's kind of Downton Abbey, but with like a Shonda Rhimes kind of twist, I guess. It's sort of a heightened version of Downton Abbey, wouldn't you say? Something like that?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, they take music from today and make it,
which I think is one of the coolest.
Yes, I absolutely
parts of the, at least the, stylistically, the way that they use.
I mean, in one episode of season two, they take Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus.
Right. Yeah. It's great. Actually, I have that playlist. And I listen to that, that so music, good. Which is really, it's really good. So it's like a string quartet,
mm-hmm.
Cover of like modern pop mm-hmm. songs basically. And they use that in some of the dance scenes, like when they're having a big banquet or dance or, I guess just at any moment where it's appropriate, yeah. but they use that music as the background of the soundtrack for this series. So season one was a huge, huge hit. And I know that it made many a fan of the actor who played Simon, whose name I always have trouble pronouncing, but
Regé-Jean-Page.
There you go. Regé-Jean-Page. Perfect. And so he include lots of fans, including my wife, who when she found out that he was not going to be largely featured in season two was like, okay, I'm not watching. She was so angry. But she gave in and she's watching season two now. So season one was a massive hit, and so there's been a lot of anticipation for season two. Where do you, without spoiling anything for season two, but where do you rank it, or how do you compare it to season one? How did you feel about it? Now that you've seen it all, does it match up to the expectations that we had from season one, or what do you think?
So I've not read the books, and I think I need to read the books. But in comparison, so season one, I would give season one on a rating scale a 9. Okay, so season one, it kind of from the very start it takes off, like everything happens. It's got the drama, it's got yes. the love, the comedy. Right
from
the start,
I remember that from season one. I remember being sucked in.
Yes,
immediately. First
immediately,
episode.
Like yeah. from the very first episode, from the very first couple of minutes, you're drawn in. So I give it a 9. With this one, and I've seen all 8 episodes, it was really hard. Because
you mean just hard to get into or hard to stay to with
get,
the whole
hard
time?
Hard to get into and stay with because of the fact, and with not going into much detail at all, it just was the same plot, the same issue in every episode. So it's the same from the very first episode to basically the last episode. It is the same thing.
So I don't think it's spoiling anything to basically set up, because it is very first episode. You have Anthony, who is seeking a wife,
mm-hmm.
and he's kind of the most eligible bachelor. And then all these women from surrounding places are coming in to meet, and so he's looking for the perfect match, the perfect woman to make his
Viscountess.
Yeah, Viscountess or whatever. And so he meets these two sisters, Edwina and Kate, right? Mm-hmm. Edwina is the younger of the two. Kate is sort of an overbearing, protective older sister.
Antony in female form.
Yeah, so sort of Antony in female form.
And she's basically taken on the claim as spinster, like.
Right, so she's 26, so she's really old. Really, really old. and she has given up on ever meeting someone and getting married, right? Mm-hmm. And her sister, Edwina, is, I don't know if they cover her age, but she's significantly younger.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But she's very ready to be married. And so Antony takes a liking to Edwina.
Only because she is named the Diamond.
She is the Diamond, right? Which is the most eligible bachelorette, I guess. And so Kate, the older sister, does not like Antony from the get-go. And they have a encounter in the first episode, I believe, out in the woods where they come across one another on a random horse ride or something. Mm-hmm. And things don't get off to a good start, basically. So Kate, the overprotective sister, does not like Antony. And so are you saying that that's basically a conflict that plays throughout the entire season and that it's basically kind of repetitive?
Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I mean, honestly, it really does. And I don't really know how to, I don't know how to talk about it and kind of say exactly why I'm saying it this way, since you haven't seen the episodes and it's still pretty new. But it just kind of.
So I'll say one thing, and okay, both of these shows, excuse me, both seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Now I don't know about season two. Season one, is a bit risque, shall we say, with some.
Yeah, that's true. Season one is really risque.
Yeah, I don't know about season two.
Season two is hard, not at all, hardly.
Okay, that's what that was the sense that I was getting.
He's a gentleman.
Yeah, so season one, there was a ton of chemistry between Simon and Daphne, mm-hmm. right? I think that, and I don't know that I've ever recognized that in a series or film before, to that extent, to where it's like, there was just something there and that was captured in that series where the connection between them really drew you in mm-hmm. to that story. And in season two so far, for the first three episodes at least, I don't think Shella, my wife, or I are feeling that same kind of energy between Antony and Edwina. There's sort of hinting at in the first three episodes that maybe that starts to develop between Antony and Kate, maybe, because mm-hmm. she's the older sister who seems to hate Antony, but yet they keep finding each other, kind of finding, you know, themselves in situations where they're alone, you know, or together, but, you know, with no one else around. And so there's this sort of hint that something might be developing between the two of them, even though Antony has sworn his love for Edwina.
Yes.
So, I don't know, but I'm not feeling that kind of energy in season two, and so I don't know. Without that compelling relationship at the center of the story, I just don't know.
Yeah,
I will say that I can imagine many women think that Antony's quite good looking.
He is.
And as I would also venture to say that Edwina and Kate are both very beautiful women. So there's a lot of pretty people to look at in season two.
there is. And I think it's kind of. Yeah.
It feels. Yeah. I mean, and again, just through the first three episodes, it feels like there's not that spark that drew us in season one.
Let me say it this way. I watched it. I continued to watch it because I had to. It's not because I wanted to.
Okay.
So with season one, I wanted to and I needed to, because it was just so, the chemistry and everything, the characters, all that stuff. With season two, I really only continued watching it because I had to. Like, there was no real, there was no real drive to watch it. I didn't really watch it for Anthony and Edwina, or Anthony, Edwina, and Kate, and that whole relationship circle or triangle. I watched it because Eloise plays a bigger role, and I think Eloise is amazing. Penelope plays a bigger role. I freaking love Lady Danbury. I think she is the funniest, and her relationship, or her character and Violet Bridgerton, they become a little bit more of like friends in this one, because Lady Danbury is like the host of the Sharma sisters and their mom. And so because of the fact that Antony is going after Edwina, they are, Violet and Lady Danbury are very, very close. And they're, they were like, okay, this is hilarious, them together. But I would not say that I enjoyed it as much as season one. I'd give it probably a six or seven.
Okay. I'm sure we'll continue watching it, but I kind of know, I mean, I think we've already experienced a little bit of what you're describing, because in season one, we forced ourselves to like take it in slowly. Like we watched, we weren't going to watch like multiple episodes on a night, because we were like, this is too good. We're going to take our time.
We'll watch an episode. That's how I was with season one. Season two, it was like,
and let's season get it two, over. We've have just watched like one episode each evening, but it hasn't been as compelling. And I mean, I think I'm still interested in the family, the Bridgerton family. And I think, like you said, some of those side characters, and maybe we'll see in future series, you know, future seasons, that those characters will come into play even more. And
I mean, you do kind of get to see the backstory and it kind of breaks your heart a little bit with the Edmund Bridgerton, the dad, the patriarch of the Bridgerton family.
Right. Cause we do kind find
of
out get
the backstory. Yeah. Of how it affected Antony, and how his mom losing her husband, the love of her life, and kind of not being able to be there, dealing with grief, having a baby, her son being now the Viscount at 19 years old, it kind of paints a picture as to why he is the way he is. Right. But at the same time, it really took a slow start. And it wasn't necessarily, it needed like the risque stuff like season one.
Right, right.
But I know a lot of people, but like just whenever I energy. Yeah, just, but and when I've read forums and stuff, people were like, nothing happened. No chemistry, no energy of that way until I think episode 7.
Okay.
It was like the end of episode 7.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of, it had the same people, but it did not have the same flow. And I mean, at the end of season one, we find out who Lady Whistledown is, it is Penelope Featherington. And so that plays a big part because
she becomes a more prominent character.
Yes, she becomes a more prominent character in trying to hide her alter ego from her best friend, Eloise, who is just infatuated with Lady Whistledown. And so Eloise kind of just kind of goes a little fangirl crazy a little bit and gets herself into some messy situations where Penelope is trying to help out and all this stuff. So with Antony's, I found myself being more invested in all of the other characters than I was with Antony.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well.
It wasn't terrible. I still highly recommend, just because it is the sets, the costumes, the music, all of that stuff. Just the overall flow of the show is really, really good. And who doesn't love Julie Andrews and being Lady Whistledown? So I highly recommend it. It just, it, Don't go in with the mindset that it's going to be like season one if you watch season one. If you haven't watched season one, you don't really have to watch season one. I mean, obviously, you kind of need to just to get backstory on characters. But at the same time, it kind of continues with backstory on all the characters anyways.
Right.
But if you do a back-to-back, definitely give yourself some time between season one and season two, because it will be a snoozer in comparison.
Yeah. Highly recommended.
Highly snoozer. Recommended. Just a bit of a snooze if you're coming from season one.
All right. Well, let's take another short break. And then when we come back, we're going to touch on, we just have one episode to go on, so we won't maybe have a whole lot to say, but we're going to talk about the new Paramount Plus series, Halo, based on the very long running and very popular video game.
Rage blinds you.
Rage is all I have left. The Covenant will not stop.
What else are you willing to sacrifice?
Everything. What's the point in saving humanity if we're gonna give up our own?
I'm interested in finding a way to be less reliant on Dr. Halsey moving forward.
The truth could bring us all down.
There is something within us. Something sacred. Something worth protecting.
Welcome back. Rory, so you were able to check out the one episode that's currently available of Halo.
I watched it twice.
I'll start this by... Oh, you watched the same episode twice?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Yep. So I'll start this off by asking you, are you a fan of the video game Halo?
Yes.
Okay. I am too. Now, I'm not a big video game guy. I don't really play video games a whole lot.
I love
it.
But
I went
games.
Through a very short period in my life right after I graduated from college and I moved out to Colorado. And our oldest brother, Dave, and I shared an apartment. And Dave brought with him, when he moved out to Colorado, he brought an Xbox and he brought two games that I remember playing. Now, he may have had more, but I remember playing on a daily basis for like 2 months. We either played Splinter Cell or Halo. Those were our two games. And we played together like every day when he would get home from work. And it was a blast. And I remember I loved the video game Halo. And so I was super pumped for this series. And it was very cool to see the imagery, like,
oh my gosh,
to see
amazing.
Master Chief and like a lot of the imagery from like the things I remembered from the video game, like brought to life in this series. I'd also say, I also say I really love the look of this series. Like, it's just really visually vibrant, and I don't know, maybe, and there is a lot of animation in it, you know, but it's it is live action, but then of course certain characters and things are animated, but it just has this really, like, I don't know, high def bright sort of look to it that feels kind of cool and unique for sci-fi, because a lot of sci-fi currently tends to be a bit more sort of dark and lots of grayscale color. Yep. This is very colorful. And just reminded me a lot visually of the actual video game. So
yeah. I mean, I this is like nerd girl side, but I love playing video games.
Yeah, like, you whenever are big I into have, video games. I am not.
Whenever I have free time, it is just kind of a day that I just don't want to really, like, I'm a huge extrovert, but I sometimes have to have, like, a little bit of introvert time, and that's usually whenever I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down, and I'm going to play, like, a video game or something. And most of the time, whenever I sit down and I'm like, okay, I'm going to introvert myself, it lasts for like 5 minutes. And then I put on a headset and just start talking to people. So it really doesn't. It's just, yeah, anyways. But I love the Halo video. Like, I love the Halo games. The, yeah. The graphics been a on ton them. Of them. Yeah. Yeah, there has been so many. And so right now I currently have one of the Halo, I think it's the most recent Halo game. And so I've been playing that, and I was playing it for a while, and then I kind of stopped and got into some other ones. And watching this, I was like, oh my gosh, it just made me want to go back and play it, because it almost is like first person because of how realistic they made it. That you feel like, holy crap, this could be like, this is real life. Yeah. This is real life now. Pablo Schreiber is amazing. He is, I feel he like plays, he is an underrated actor. He's Master Chief.
Okay, that's, so I recognize his voice. I didn't recognize his face right away. Yes. Has he been in other...
He was one of the guards for Orange is the New Black.
Okay.
He was in that 13 Hour, the secret something. That was the one with John Krasinski and a whole bunch of, I think it was like the Secret Soldiers of Benghazi or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. He was in Den of Thieves. And he's been in some other ones, but I don't know them off the top of my head. Those are just the ones that I've seen. But he's been in, I think what you would know him from is Orange is the New Black. And,
maybe. But yeah, he's good in this, and his voice is, I mean, when he has the, you know what it made me think of? It, when he has the Master Chief sort of helmet on and everything, it reminded me of Mandalorian. Because
that's what Matthias said.
Yeah, because the way he talks is very matter of fact, and when he's giving commands and things, there's not a lot of emotion in his voice.
Yeah.
But then when he takes the helmet off, then there's a bit more, you know, then it is a bit more human. But he is sort of a genetically engineered creature, super or not soldier, right? And so so there's something somewhat robotic about him when he's in Master Chief mode, you know.
Yeah,
it just, but basically it sounds like there's, I mean, I don't know how much you need to, we need to delve into the plot, because essentially, you know, it's, there are aliens, there are, yeah,
you've got the Covenant, and then the UNSC, so the Spartans, which is
right, so there's like a government, a formal government that's human. And then there's a Covenant, which is an alien race, right? Yep. And the Covenant also has like a long history. So they have, which is part of sort of the mystery of the series, is like there are these remnants of Covenant civilization and things that they have to kind of go through and search. And so there's some mystery to that. But then there's also human sort of rebels, or they're sort of the like Madrigal. The fringe. What are they called?
The Madrigal.
Yeah, so they're a human. They're humans, but they don't live within the sort of the system of the human government, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, so there's all these different sort of competing forces, but primarily, what I think anyone who is new to the show or this series would just need to know that you've got, you know, you've got Master Chief, these, what are they called? Spartans, these Spartans soldiers, super soldiers who are basically combating the Covenant, which is this alien race.
The alien race. And then I will say the hairstyle that they picked for Quan Ha. Oh my gosh. That's hated that hairstyle. Girl.
The young girl.
Yeah, that's the young girl from the Madrigal. I want to say Madrigal because of Encanto, but it's Madrigal.
Madrigal.
So every single time.
It looks kind of futuristic and...
No, I hate it.
Punk.
Don't like.
I don't know. I thought it was okay.
But... Don't like it.
But yeah, man, that first episode, like, that's pretty devastating.
First episode is not for the faint of heart. I will say, on a scale, don't watch with young children. It's a little bit bloody.
Yeah, it's very violent, I would say.
And
not bloody, like, though. I think it's mostly
not bloody.
Sci-fi kind of violence, explosions and things. Not a lot of gruesome up-close blood or anything like that.
Well, except for that one part.
Well, there's some. There is some.
There is some. So, but honestly, I kind of hate the fact that it is a week by week. That really, really annoys me because I wish that they would just kind of put it all out there just because I feel like I'm back in the old ages where you have to wait for shows to come out. But it also is such a good show that I don't think it'll ever lose my interest. I know some shows, when they do week by week, lose me just because I'm like, well.
We just forget. We forget about them, right?
That's what it is.
But I will say that this, as a sci-fi series, you know, again, it's just one episode in. But when this episode was over, Shella was like, whoa, that was really good. So she really liked it, even though she had no familiarity with Halo before this episode. So it's pretty cool. I'm excited about it. It looks super high budget. I don't know how much Paramount Plus spent on this, but
I just looked it up. They had a budget of $90 million.
I just saw that as well. $90 million budget.
So $90 million. No,
and it's
not
Amblin Television, which is Steven Spielberg's production company is involved. So, $90 million, that's pretty big for a TV series, though, I would think.
Yeah.
But anyway, I definitely enjoyed it. The first episode, looking forward to more to come. So,
yep. I think it'll be very, very good. Before we wrap up, any recommendations? I think I have one. I don't remember if I talked about it last week or not. So it may be the same recommendation, but I do have a recommendation. Do you have anything?
I don't. I've been watching just basically the series that we've just been discussing on this episode. So I don't really have anything outside of that. I did watch The Power of the Dog, which I would recommend if you're into very serious.
Is it about a dog?
No.
Oh.
It has a slow pace, I would say. It's a Western, but the performances are all wonderful. I mean, I already mentioned Benedict Cumberbatch, but then Jesse Plemons is also in this one. We talked about him last week.
Yes, we did talk about
with Windfall. So he's very good in this. And then also, who is Jesse Plemons married to? She was in Kirsten Dunst is also in this film, and she's also great. So lots of really good performances, but mostly I would just say Benedict Cumberbatch plays one of the most terrifying characters I think I've ever seen on screen. So I would rank him up there with the father character in There Will Be Blood, if you've seen that. But
that's been forever since I've seen that, but... Okay, interesting. Well, what the recommendation that I have is The Thing About Pam.
Oh, right. You did mention that.
I'm still going to stick with that recommendation. It is a week by week, and it is so infuriating, but so well done. Renee Zellweger is unrecognizable. And it is amazing. Judy Greer's in it. Josh Duhamel's in it. It is really, really good. Did I go into much depth about it?
You talked a little bit, I think, when you mentioned it a couple weeks back. You talked about the premise of it a bit.
Yeah. So it's basically based on a real person, Pamela Hupp. She murders her best friend. And it's based out of Troy, Missouri, so a really small town close to St. Louis. And it is just about how much of a master manipulator she is and how she doesn't really have to do much because the small town, the judicial system in the small town is just insane. So I would highly, highly, highly recommend The Thing About Pam. It is on Hulu. It's an NBC show, but it is on Hulu, and I think they air on Tuesdays, I believe, is the day that they are there. Tuesdays or Wednesdays. So, highly, highly recommend.
Cool.
That's all. With that, as always, we appreciate every single one of you. Every one of you that emails and lets us know that we're doing a fantastic job. Oh, Aaron, yeah. Did you go to Popeye's again after your one Popeye's encounter?
No, we didn't. We haven't been back yet.
Okay.
We wanted to. We actually did plan to, but we changed our mind because the drive-through was really backed up and we were...
You didn't want to wait another
45 minutes? Too big of a risk. Yeah.
Okay. I just was like, I wonder if there's a follow-up.
I fried my own chicken.
Well, there you go. Make your own Popeye's chicken. Yeah. Actually, you can't do that because it's...
No, I can't. My chicken was not as good.
Anyways, we appreciate you guys listening and sending us things, recommendations, things to watch. If you have anything that you have been watching that we have not mentioned that you think we should watch, make sure you email us at imtryingtolikeit@gmail.com or you can contact us on Facebook at...
Facebook.com/trying to like it.
There you get previews on what we're going to be discussing, different things like that. You can drop us a comment and everything. Make sure you like, subscribe, rate, review, all the things, because it makes our egos a little bit bigger and a little bit brighter. Makes us know that it's not just family listening and rating us.
Mom.
I'll say it. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Have a great trip up to Washington State. If you go to Canada, get me something good, please. Anyways, as always, stay safe out there. This comes out on Friday, so have a great weekend. And thanks for listening to I'm Trying to Like It.
I'm trying to like it.